Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. All right, I'm joined by Aaron in Los Angeles.
Hello.
I think I said Aaron in a Los Angeles. There are multiple Los Angeles.
Which one am I in?
Well, you're in the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Okay. This is a fact. They changed their name. They're not called the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
They're just Anaheim Angels.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I thought they were the California Angels back. Like, that's a sweet name.
Dude, that was the best.
That is a sweet name. Why didn't they take that one back?
Yeah, I don't know. The
Rangers haven't figured out. You should go state name for baseball. Colorado Rockies, New York Yankees.
Well, it's hard with California because you have so many areas, you know, that have teams that have, you know. But it worked with California Angels for as long as it did. I mean, Golden State Warriors works.
Not really.
I have some issues with Golden State. That's not a good name. That'd be like if you named a team like the Lone Star Rangers. Like, that's no good.
All right. Well, that's Skylar Teo back with us for two pods in a row, a record for 2017. Whoa. And not just
one more, and he's on fire.
He is on fire. He
if
is
I was dating moving. Kumail, I would have to take a day off.
What Skylar's doing right now is he is proving his Patreon payout.
Because I've really been getting those in the
not only is he back recording, but Skylar happened to land us the biggest interview in Brave Little Podcast history.
Huge.
Ooh. Yeah. So Skylar locked in an interview with a director named David Lowry, who, for those of you who don't immediately recognize that name, understandable, but he did direct Pete's Dragon from last year, the kind of what I consider Disney's sleeper hit of 2016, a film that we loved.
It was in my top five.
Oh, yeah, it was in your top five.
I love that movie.
Pete's Dragon.
Carl Urban.
And Bryce Dallas Howard. I mean, I think she gets top billing.
I think it's honestly her best performance. Jessica Chastain was fantastic in that movie.
Yeah, and you get about 3 minutes of Robert Redford, which was really good.
Hey. He was in there for like 15 minutes, and he was very solid. I don't want to hear any besmirching of Redford's performance in that movie. I liked it a lot. No, I mean, like, genuinely, I really enjoyed Robert Redford in that movie.
No, he's good.
I think it's his best performance in... I liked it more than I did the boat one.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you were going to say you liked it better than Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
No. But that boat one, I watched on an airplane. And, like, watching a movie about somebody stuck on a boat when you're on an airplane is a real mind cluster.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, like, I bet. I bet it's a cluster cuss. Okay.
Yeah, movie reference on a movie podcast.
So David Lowry is a Dallas-based filmmaker who's not only directed Pete's Dragon, he did Ain't Them Body Saints with Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. Or Rooney Mara. I don't know how to say her last name.
I think it's Mara.
I think it's probably Mara.
It's Mara.
Yeah, that sounds
right. Mara.
Okay.
I think her sister says Mara, though.
And Lowry, yeah, that's right. Kate does Mara. Kate Mara and Rooney Mara. That's correct. Right. Yeah. It's weird that they would do that, but it's true.
And then... Rooney, it's her family that owns the Steelers, right?
No, the Giants.
The Rooneys?
The Giants?
Who owns
it's
the Steelers?
The Giants. It's
the Steelers. I'm pretty sure the Rooney family owns the Steelers.
Yeah, Rooney's her first name.
That's the joke.jpg.
Skylar, you got to see an early press screening of A Ghost Story, which is Lowry's most recent film.
Actually, more than just a press screening, this was at the Oak Cliff Film Festival, which is a film festival that they do here in Dallas. Oak Cliff's a really cool neighborhood in town. And what was cool about this, they filmed it here in Dallas. Dallas is, of course, the Hollywood of Northeast Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole crew pretty much showed up to the screening. And it was in the Texas Theater, which, if you don't know history at all, is where they caught the man who allegedly shot JFK.
John Wilkes Booth.
Yes, John Wilkes Booth, who shot JFK. He might have
Sirhan, Sirhan.
Just get a chance, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We can talk about that later. But it's a really large theater, and it was sold out. I got really lucky to get in and got a really good seat, and it was an experience. And afterwards, I was lucky enough to get some time with David, who is just an incredibly gracious, incredibly cool guy. Honestly, like, the weird thing about him is with the movies he makes, they're pretty high-minded, especially Ain't Them Body Saints and A Ghost Story. Like, they're not these, I don't know, they're really interesting films. And so you expect him to be kind of this obscure, pretentious Hollywood type, which he's not at all. He is this really down-to-earth, awesome guy. And he is willing to talk about anything and everything, and he's just willing to make time for people. So I was able to talk to him then, made a contact, was able to talk to his PR people at A24 who are doing the release on this A Ghost Story. Which, by the way, A24 has been, like, advertising the hell out of this movie for how, like, it's... I cannot believe the release it's getting. I'm so excited. Like, this is normally a kind of movie that's released in 80 theaters, and it's going to be in hundreds of screens by the end of the month.
Well,
which is just incredible.
He shot it in this box format. I don't know the exact aspect ratio. I mean, it's not 3:4.
No, it's like, what did I... It's like 1.2 by 1 or something. It's crazy.
And that alone gets you a very limited release, right?
Normally, yeah.
Cause,
well, it looks like old 16mm footage. Like, it looks like old...
Right.
Like you're watching an old home video, basically.
And something I talked to him about on the night of the screen that didn't come up in the interview you're about to hear, he said that he did that because he wants the whole thing... You're following this ghost who's stuck in a house. That's the crux of the film. And he wanted you to feel claustrophobic. He wanted you to feel like you're stuck in this house with this ghost. And so that ratio, you feel boxed into it. And you feel like it's smaller and that you're like kind of in this narrow space. And in a theater, I think it's a really cool experience. Like, I think seeing it up on the screen, it works really well. And so...
No, it's in limited release right now.
Yeah, it's just in New York and LA today.
Like, it's not even playing in Dallas right now. Like, you couldn't see it right now.
Correct.
If you wanted to.
Correct. But I think we're getting it Friday.
You're getting it Friday. So Sacramento area, there's nothing listed yet. Interestingly enough, it's playing on the 28th in Salt Lake City, for those Utah listeners.
Which, by the way, Utah listeners, you get a shout out in the interview. So
I sure do. And so listening. Does BYU, our alumni.
Alumnus? I almost said University of Utah just to.
Oh, dude, that you don't understand the rage that I would have overcome me if you're.
B-more would have probably logged out of our group chat immediately. You know what's sad is I worry that this is gonna get sent to David and he's gonna listen to this, and he's gonna be like, "What the hell did I do? Why did I do this?"
He's not gonna see this.
I hope he's
or hear this.
He's way too cool.
Well, I have some good news for you guys. I was just checking our Patreon page. And we have a new contributor.
We do.
One Mr. D. Lowry.
Uh-oh.
Now,
Dallas.
Are we sure this isn't the redheaded musician?
Oh, yeah.
It could be. I don't know. We don't. They don't disclose their hair color when they contribute to our Patreon.
They don't ask them.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we wanted that.
We're sure this isn't the lead singer of Cracker Barrel or whatever.
I think it is. Yeah, Cracker, I think it's the name of the band. What a time to be alive, guys. What a time to be alive.
David Lowry is significant for a few other reasons. He is under Disney's umbrella right now. He has like a, I don't know if it's like a multi-picture deal right now, but I know that they are paying him to write a script for a Peter Pan film that he may or may not direct.
I would assume he'll direct.
I would assume so, too.
Because after the success he had, because like, I don't think... He thought he was going to be able to direct Pete's Dragon after they finished writing it. Because it seemed like a real long shot. Because like all he had to that point, as far as feature went, that had done anything was Ain't Them Bodies.
Right.
And to go from that to a major studio production in New Zealand for 3 months is pretty wild. But Disney trusted him. They saw it.
Yeah.
And he delivered.
So speaking of Disney, I've said this on the pod before, but I think David Lowry is being groomed to... film a Star Wars film. I think it could be a trilogy film, the next ones that they do, 10, 11, 12. It could be one of the Star Wars stories.
I would love to see it be a story. I think he would have a really more interesting time with that.
I think he would too, but he's more in the vein of who they're picking for the actual, you know, saga film.
Could you imagine if they would have put him on instead of Ron Howard to finish off the Han Solo movie?
Yeah. Oh my god.
How conflicted would you be, Skylar, if he was the replacement director?
I would not like cheering against him. That would be really hard. Although I think it'd be really interesting to get Han underneath a nice sheet for the rest of that film, because I feel like he'd have a better job acting.
So I don't want to talk about the interview
Baby
too much.
Been Han.
Oh, also, you said Lowry's working on a film with Robert Redford right now, too, right?
Yeah, so they actually just wrapped filming right before he came down to do the premiere the Oak Cliff Film Festival. And you can go on IMDb and see pictures. He's shockingly working with Casey Affleck, which I'm not sure how he knows Casey.
Yeah, those two have become fast friends.
My favorite thing in David Lowry interviews, if you watch any, which I did a little bit for preparation for this today, is everyone asks him about his friendship with Casey Affleck. So I avoided that. I feel like I avoided most of the tropes with him today. So even though it's my first real interview with the director, even though I was trying to pretend like I've done it a bunch.
Yeah.
First big time interview, I was nervous as hell, but I think it went pretty well.
No, you did. You did really good, and
I was pretty happy.
Like I said, I don't want to talk about his answers too much because I obviously just want to play that.
Right.
You know,
oh, sorry.
Play
anyway, the movie is called Old Man and the Gun. It's him. It's Elizabeth Moss. It's Casey Affleck.
Oh.
Danny Glover.
Wait.
So I mean,
you're talking Mad Men, Elizabeth Moss.
The Mad Men.
Danny Glover, yeah. Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Or are we talking Donald Glover?
No,
from
this
the
is not Don Glover. This is Danny Glover.
Okay. Or Donald Glover made famous by Spider-Man Homecoming.
Dude, maybe it was just the Chinese rip I was watching, but he didn't seem to get a lot of screen time. But to be fair, half the movie was blurry.
We'll talk about Spider-Man.
He could have just been one of the background guys, but that was rough.
We will talk about that on our Spider-Man episode. But what I keep alluding to, but I haven't quite been able to spit out yet, he references Star Wars.
And Spider-Man.
He references Star Wars as like, you know, the movie. I don't remember what the exact question was he was answering, but
it's his first movies he'd ever seen.
Yeah.
The first movies he ever saw.
Make no mistake, he is asked different types of questions constantly about his inspirations. He is absolutely saying Star Wars in a very calculated move, okay? Gareth Edwards learned this. The more you say that you grew up loving Star Wars, the more likely you are to direct a Star Wars movie. He wants to do it. Disney is absolutely evaluating him. He will be directing a Star Wars film. And that gets me excited because this is our first big directing interview. And we need to be clear here because we do run into a lot of shenanigans on the pod. When you called in for our 100th episode anniversary pod, Skyler, uh-huh. You had a lot of these clips that we played that weren't legit. Okay.
Wait, what?
This interview is 100% legit. No joke.
See, I've heard rumors about people asking about that as if those interviews weren't real. That was Spielberg.
The Spielberg one was real. The Spielberg one was real.
Right. I'm not saying that was actually Titanic guy or his ex-wife.
Cameron.
Yeah.
It was not. Kathleen Bigelow. That wasn't James Cameron. It was his ex-wife. But that was not James Cameron, I'll be honest.
He's too busy with the 6 Avatar movies in the Avatar world.
I'm surprised that... Yeah. How do we not know any directors who are in the Avatar-verse?
Oh, I don't know.
The Avatar Expanded Universe. Man.
I bet we can do the guy who did Avatar The Last Airbender.
You think so? Because he's on a pretty hot streak now.
Oh, jeez. That's right. You liked his last movie. Ugh. Okay.
Yeah.
It's amazing that one good movie gets him back in the good graces of Hollywood. He had what, 5
yes,
bombs
half
in
a dozen,
row?
Half a dozen terrible movies.
The Visit wasn't terrible, guys. The Visit
was not terrible. You need two good movies to make up for every bad one. Okay, he is so far from back.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. I think that's enough of a preface. People know
Let's
this is a big
it.
Deal. Shout out to Skyler. Did a great job in the interview.
Nice work, buddy.
A little bit nervous up top, but he start the nerve.
Oh,
you get over the nerves
quick. First
question.
I just talked him right through the answer. I was like, oh yeah, this is an interview. I forgot. I'm not supposed to just give you the answer, idiot.
All right. Well, here it is. Skyler chatting with David Lowry, the director of Pete's Dragon.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for having me on this interview.
Oh, my pleasure.
Awesome. Actually, we met at the Oak Cliff Film Festival at the premiere just a few weeks ago. And so it was a great opportunity.
Yeah,
we got to chat. We actually, it's a funny thing. So my podcast, my co-host and I, David, we met, we have a podcast in a way because of you, because way back at Sundance, what year was it? Was it 2012 when Ain't That Body Saints came out? Or was it
2013? Oh, yeah, 2013.
Okay, 2013. So the two of us, we went out, we were at BYU, students of the up there together, and we went out for a day, And we managed to get into Ain't the Body Saints playing that night what's the theater? It's a small little room, the Sundance little room that they have. And it was just a really cool, intimate experience. And from that, me and him got more and more into movies, and we spun off this little podcast and been having a lot of fun for a few years now. And
oh, well,
so
that's
it's
amazing
great
to hear.
Yeah, it's great to kind of go full circle and get you on the podcast.
Completely.
So, yeah. First off, I just want to emphasize to everyone who's listening that this is a film you need to go see in the theater, because there's a lot of movies that I enjoy bringing home, watching on the TV, even on the iPad, but it's a different experience. This one, there's something different about it that I kind of want to talk about. Daniel Hart, who did the scoring and also produced the song that I've been listening to nonstop since I got to see it, I Get Overwhelmed. He created this soundscape, and that's something you did as well with the music and the lack of music at times. But I just feel like this is something you need to see in a theater. What do you think about the theater experience of the film?
That's certainly my hope. My hope with every movie I make is that they will be seen in a theater, but I particularly want people to see this one in the theater because it is such an experience. It was designed to be an experience, an almost physical experience, and I feel like the best way to have that is to see it projected as big as possible with the sound turned up as loud as possible and without any of the distractions that normally come about when you're watching a movie at home. So I am very glad that it's, you know, only in theaters right now, that it's not day and date, and that audiences will have to go to the cinema to see it and to have this experience. And I think it'll be a better, they'll have a better time because of it. So I encourage everyone to go out and see this on the biggest screen you can find.
Yeah. And if you can go talk to the projectionist before you get there and just say, turn the music volume up to 10, it'll be a worthwhile experience for you. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that Texas Theater, it's an interesting venue. It's huge, but it was still, everyone did a really great job of just being quiet, not moving too much, no wrestling. And it just, man, it sells it. That's a really interesting point. A24, who's distributing it, correct? They're doing a really great job of getting this across the country. And so a lot of our listeners are in Utah, they're in Idaho, they're in Arizona, and there's places where normally you don't get to see a movie like this until like 6 months later. But this is something where you're going to be able to see it soon, and you'll get this opportunity and definitely go take it.
Yeah, I mean, I think by the end of July, it'll be playing all over the country. It's like right now, it's New York and L.A. Next week, this coming Friday, it'll be in a few more theaters. But by the end of July, it'll be everywhere. And I'm really excited for audiences to just discover it. You know, the fact that it'll be playing in multiplexes and in cities that normally wouldn't show art house movies is really exciting, because it is an art house movie, but I also think it's very approachable. And while it may confuse or challenge or provoke or alienate certain people, I think a lot of people will be really excited to have the experience that this movie can provide.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting having this playing right next to Spider-Man or the new, what is it, Transformers 5, whatever we have out now. It'll just be an interesting contrast.
I mean, I think, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing Spider-Man myself, and I feel like I'm a big fan of you know, balancing, like seeing multiple movies in a day and getting a good balance. So this would be the perfect, you know, counterpoint to Spider-Man. So go see Spider-Man and then see this. Or see this. Like, this is a good movie to see at the beginning of the day. Go see this, you know, after you've had your coffee and just kick your day off, and then later that night go see Spider-Man. See this, and then see Spider-Man, and then go see this again. That's the way you should do
That's
it.
That's probably the way to do it. It's kind of like when you're eating sushi, you want a little palate cleanser in the middle, so you have a little ginger, and that might be Spider-Man, but then you want some different sushi after that. That's, you got a ghost. So I recently saw a post you made about a film that looks similar to this that you made when you were 7 with some casting from your brothers, it looked like, where your brother was in a sheet. Like the really iconic ghost. What kind of films inspired you when you were a 7-year-old filmmaker versus the films that inspire you now?
Well, it's funny because I wasn't really allowed to see that many movies when I was 7. I grew up without a television, and so I didn't have home video at my disposal. Mm-hmm. But I had seen Star Wars, or all three. I'd seen all of the Star Wars movies, and that was the reason I wanted to make movies. I had seen 2001. That was the first movie my grandparents ever showed me. I saw that before Star Wars. I'd seen E.T. and Pinocchio in the theaters, and that was about it. I don't think I'd even seen any Indiana Jones movies at that point.
Oh, man.
But I was always going to the video store, or not the video store, the grocery store that my parents would go to had a video section in it, which is just a crazy thing to think about. But there was like a video section. And I would just, while my parents were shopping for groceries, I would just go look at video boxes. And the artwork on them and the photos on the back of the boxes are all emblazoned in my memory and had a tremendous impact on me. And I usually was most fascinated by the horror films. So haunted house movies, horror movies, scary movies in general were fascinating to me long before I ever had a chance to see them for myself. I think my grandfather subscribed to Popular Mechanics, and there was an issue that talked about how they did the visual effects in Poltergeist. And the pictures from Poltergeist absolutely terrified me. I was so freaked out by them, but I couldn't get enough of them. And so when I finally got a chance to make a movie of my own for the first time, when I was 7 years old, with a friend's camcorder, I made a movie called Poltergeist. And it starred my brother wrapped in a bed sheet, although he had a scary mask on in addition to the bed sheet. And it was about him just terrorizing my other brother. And it was probably 2 or 3 minutes long, maybe 4 minutes long. And every single shot, you can hear me yell action in the background. And it's very satisfying to me to know that that was my first filmmaking effort. And now here I am still making movies about ghosts haunting houses 30 years later.
Yeah, there's something really poetic about that. It's like nice chiasmus, like things coming back to the start, but not so that this is the end. Far from the end. Yeah. That's really cool. I feel like the modern day version of that's a red box, but we don't quite get the artwork exposure you get from the tactile VHS tapes that we had.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I don't really miss the video store experience that much. Like, I don't romanticize it to the degree that some people do, but I do miss that artwork. I do miss those video boxes and the way in which you could just discover a film through, you know, a poster that was incredibly impressionistic and really may not have had that much to do with the movie. Like, a lot of those old horror movie posters had nothing to do with the movie, but the box art sure made you want to rent them.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm a graphic designer, and I think a big part of what inspired that was getting to go see, like, the really cool covers that they put on the VHS tapes, and, like, there was just something tactile, or, like, on the old DVDs you'd pull out, and there was just cool inside art that you'd get to look through, and now I buy all my movies on iTunes, and it's not quite the same experience.
Yeah, I still buy a lot of Criterion Blu-rays, which is sort of the last, you know, gasp of the DVD market, I feel, because I still buy a lot of those, and those all have amazing art and the booklets inside. But we put out a limited edition VHS Pete's Dragon because it was the very first movie that Pete's Dragon was the very first movie Disney ever released on VHS, and I wanted it to also be the very last movie they ever released on VHS. And so getting to do that was really exciting, but I was a little disappointed that we didn't get to come up with specific 80s style VHS box art for it.
Oh, man. You see some of, like, they do those one-off box art projects where it's, like, just really cool stuff that you see. And, yeah, I had no idea Pete's Dragon did that with VHS. That's a cool thing I'll have to look out for. Okay, so thank you so much for your time. I wanted to end it with a little game we like to play with our guests, where I know you're not someone who, like, loves to read reviews, but with that in mind, we're going to play a game where you're going to guess whether this critical review I'm going to read is from a ghost story or for the classic film Ghost.
Okay.
Now, very similar movies, so it might be tough. So just one word to answer, ghost story or ghost. So the first review, we'll see. It's tough. So here it is. A comedy, romance, supernatural thriller rolled into one. This film is a zippy pastiche that somehow manages to seem fresh, even though it's built entirely out of borrowed parts. What do you think?
I'm going to guess that's ghost purely because they use the term zippy.
Yes, you got that one right. Okay. Now, this next one, it's going to be tough as well. I loved everything about it, including the scenes I wasn't quite sure how to take.
Oh, that sounds like a ghost story to me.
That's a ghost story. You're right. Now, this one's really tough because it's, like, right down the middle. But it says, starring Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore, and best of all, Whoopi Goldberg, this kitschy supernatural romance was nominated for the Best Picture Oscar, probably because of its commercial popularity?
This feels like a trick question. I mean, I feel like I should withhold from answering because this could be, I don't know. I'm going to say that that is a review of a ghost story.
That's a ghost story. You're right. So you got all three. So you actually, we'll send you a prize in the mail.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm based in downtown Dallas, so it won't take too long to get to you. But once you're back in town. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on and doing the interview. Everybody, go see a ghost story as soon as it comes to a theater near you. Use the internet to find them. It's easy to do. Thank you so much, David Lowry.
Thank you. I really appreciate the conversation.
Have a good one.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.